Sakahosh, Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vaishadi Gaur Bhaktivam Ki Sri Sri Radha Krishna Ko Gopinath Sham Kundadha Kunigiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Navadip Tham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Jamana Mai Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveta Bhakta Brinda Ki Jai. All glories to you, Samudamurtis. All glories to you, Samudamurtis. All glories to you, Samudamurtis. Go pray and unde.
So, again, we can recite this seventh chapter. Hey, he's got one of the little ones. He depresses, huh? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Maya Sakta Mana Partha Yogam Yunjan Marashayaha Asam Shayam Samagramam Yata Gyasasi Tach Trinu Gyanam Teham Savigyanam Idam Bhaksham Yasheshataha Yaj Gatva Neha Bhuyon Yaj Gatavyam Avashishyate Manusyanam Sahasreshu Kaschit yatati siddhaye, yatatam api siddhanam, kaschan mam veti tatvataha, bhumirapo nalo vayu, kammano buddhirevacha, ahankara iti ame, vinna prakritir rashtatha, apareyam itastvanyam, prakritim vidhime param, jiva bhuta mahabaho, Yayedam Taryate Jagat Etad Yoni Niputani Sarvani Chupataraya Aham Krishnasya Jagata Prabhava Pralayastata Mata Padataram Nanyat Kinchidasti Dhananjaya Mai Sarvamidam Protam Sutre Maniganaiva Rasoham Apsukanteya Prabhasmi Shasi Surya Yoho Pranava Sarva Vedeshu Shabdake Parusham Nashu Punyo Gandha Prativyam Cha Tejas Chasmi Vibhavasau Jivanam Sarva Puteshu Tapas Chasmi Tapas Vishu Vijamam Sarva Putanam Vidhi Parta Sanatanam Buddhir Purimatam Asmi Tejas Tejas Vinamaham Palang Palavatang Chahang Kamaraga Vivarjitam Tarmha Viruddho Puteshu Kamosmi Paratarshapa Ye Chaiva Satvika Bhava Rajasastam Asastraye Matta Eve Titan Vidhi Atvaham te shute mai Shri hir gunamaya bhavaya Ebhi sarvam idam jagat Mohitam na bhijanati Mame bhya paramavyayam Daivihesha gunamai Mama maya duratyaya Mame vaye prapadyante Maya metang tarantite Namam duskritino mudha Prapadyante naradhamaha Maya prata jnana Asurang bhavamashrataha Chaturvita pajante mam Chana sukritinarjana Arto jigyasurartarti Gyani cha paratarshapa Tesham gyani nitya yukta Eka bhaktir vishishyate Priyo hi gyani no tyartam Aham sacha mama priyaha Jara sarva evaite Gyani tatma vame matam Astita sahi yuktatma Mam evan utumam gatim Bahunam janmanam ante Gyanavan mam prapajyate Vasudeva sarvamiti Sa mahatma sudurlabaha Kamaistaistarvita gyana Prapajyante nyadevataha Tam tam niyamamasthaya Prakritya niyata svaya Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta Shraddhayar chitun hichchati Tasya tasya chalam shraddham Tameva viridham yaham Sataya shraddhaya yuktas Tasya radhanami hate Labhate chatata kaman Mayaiva vihitan hitan Antavattu palam tesham Tadpavatyo pamedhasam Devan devayajo yanti Madbhakta yanti mamapi Avyaktam vyaktim apannam Manyante mam buddhayaha Parampavam ajananto Mamavyayam anuttamam Naham prakasha sarvasya Yogamaya samabritaha Mutoyam nabhijanati Loko mamajamavyayam Vedaham samatitani Vartamanani charjuna Pavishyani chabhutani Mam tu veda nakashchana Ichcha dvesha samuttena Tvandva mohena bharata Sarvabhutani sammoham Sargeyanti parantapa Yesham tvantagatam papam Jananam punyakarmanam Te dvandva moha nirmukta Pajante mam jridhavrataha Chara marana mokshaya Mam ashritya yatanti ye Te brahma tad vidu kritsnam Adhyatmam karma chakinam Sadhi bhutadi daivam mam Sadhi yagyam cha ye viduhu Prayana kale picha mam Te vidur yukta chetasaha Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Supanishad Su Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Sangvade Vijnana Yoga Nama Saptamodhyaya. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mayam Tathati Shapadantikam. So we're, pardon me again for these things, we're studying 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. We ended yesterday by hearing about the power of the three modes of material nature. Although Krishna is not under them, they're under him, and they're controlling everything within the three worlds. Getting out of the material nature, Krishna says, is very difficult, but one can do it simply by surrendering to him. Mame viye prapajyante mayam etam tarantite. Now we come to one of Srila Prabhupada's all-time favorite verses. Namam duskritano mudha prapajyante naradhama maya pratagyana asuram pavamashritaha. There are four kinds of duskriti. Duskriti means miscreants, impious people who don't surrender to Krishna. Mudha, Naradama, Maya, Pratagyana, and Asurabhara. One time in New York, one elderly gentleman came to see Srila Prabhupada, and he actually had written to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, yes, when I come to New York, you can come see me. So he came to New York with his letter in hand, and so I was asked to bring him to Prabhupada's apartment, which I did. And then some discussion ensued. He said to Prabhupada, he's an elderly man connected with the Yoga Society, you know, as an attender of a Yoga Society. He said, Swamiji, I like your teachings very much, but one thing that disturbs me is that one of your students said that you said that such and such person is a rascal. And he mentioned one Bengali person who's supposed to be a paramahansa of some sort. And it seems to me that he's a very holy man, and I don't know why you would call him a rascal. And Prabhupada said, who has said this? And the man said, you didn't say? And he says, if they say I have said, and I have not said, then they are rascal. So then the man was feeling pretty good. And then Prabhupada pulled one book off his bookshelf, and he showed it to the man. He handed it to the man. You know this book? Oh, yes, Dr. Radhakrishnan, Vedanta Society. Again, he was quite pleased. So Prabhupada opened up the book to this verse. No, not this verse. Manmana bhava mad bhakta mad yaji mamimasu. So he asked the man, read? So the man read the translation, and Prabhupada said, yes, he is a very good scholar. He has translated very nicely. Now, the comment, what does he say? And the man began reading. It is not unto Krishna that we have to surrender, but to the unborn, beginningless, blah, 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 within Krishna. Prabhupada said, just see. Therefore I say they are all rascals. And he elaborated on the topic, and he quoted this verse, Namam Duskritana Mudha, and he explained the various categories. And then he said, it's not my saying, it's Krishna's saying. What can I do? So, in true tell it like it is style, Prabhupada told it like it is. This purport was originally published in the 1950s in Srila Prabhupada's Back to Godhead here in India. And then when he wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is, he just, when it came to this portion, he just made a little note, include such and such article. So that's what this purport is. It's that article that originally appeared in Back to Godhead in the 1950s. It's quite a wonderful piece of reading. Prabhupada seems to me he's having a really good time here. There was always one line in the old edition that puzzled me where it says, talked about the swine who eat the soil. The swine who eat the soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. I could never understand that. Hogs eating soil. You know, soil is dirt. Yeah, it didn't seem to me that hogs ate dirt, but that's what it said. The swine who eat the soil. Huh? Do they? They eat dirt? Anything that comes in their way. Anyway, dirt isn't what Prabhupada actually said. As you see here, the original manuscript said night soil. You know what night soil is? Stool. Yeah, that's what it is. It's human excrement. That's night stool, collected and used as fertilizer, and also feasted upon by the hog community. That's what it is. I'm not going to go into a discussion of this verse, regardless of whether there's an assessment question on it or not, simply because Srila Prabhupada has so often expounded upon this verse that I don't think it's really necessary for me to expound on further in this class. If you don't know by now what these four categories are, if you haven't heard about these four classes of people, then read the purport. Everything's there. And go on reading Prabhupada's books, and you'll find this verse coming up many, many times. We're listening to his lectures. You'll find it coming up many, many times. And everything's there. Any question? Okay. Yes? Loud, please.
Is this verse referring to
Asuric Varnashram? Asuric Varnashram. You mean as there are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, so there's Mudha, Naradhama, Maya, Pratigyana, and Asura Bhavamashrita? That's an interesting thought. I've never heard that correspondence put forward before. The sort of perverted reflection of Varnashram. It seems like the Asuric Varnashram is so-called Brahmins, so-called Kshatriyas, so-called Vaishyas, and Shudras who call themselves Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, caste by birth, regardless of qualification, and so on. That's more characteristic of Asuri Varna. And ashram, there is no ashram. No, well, there's bogus ashram, bogus sannyas, bogus brahmacharya, degraded householder life, and retirement on the golf course. Okay. So we are moving ahead. Tesham, I'm sorry. Chatur vidha bhajante mam jana sukritin arjuna. Arto jigyasur artarti gyani cha bharatar shapha. There are four kinds of men who refuse to surrender to Krishna, and then there are four kinds of men who engage in his devotional service. They're described as sukriti. Kriti means having some merit. Huh? Dushkriti means bad merit, negative merit. And sukriti means very good. Su means good. Very nice. Good background, pious, in a word, sukriti. And now they're named Arta, Jigyasur, Artarti, and Gyani. Let's see. You're not the group that we did Dhruva Maharaj with. You're a different group. In the Bhakti Vaibhav course, we talked about this subject matter in relation to nectar of devotion. There are standard examples of each one of these categories. Perhaps you know. Arta means one who's in distress. Who's the example of Arta?
Gajendra.
And Jigyasu, those who are inquisitive. Shanakadi Rishi, yes, the sages of Naimisharanya. And Artarti, desiring material gain, Dhruva Maharaj. And Gani, four Kumaras. They're typically cited as the examples for these four categories. It's actually a very good discussion. We put this together with the course that we had that you weren't part of. Fits together very well. But the idea is that all of these four classes of people are fortunate because they approach Krishna. The unfortunate or impious, in the same circumstances, when they need money, they worship Lord Shiva, or they worship somebody, Kuvera or Lakshmi. When they're in distress, then they say, there's no God. Otherwise, why would I be suffering so much? When they're curious, they get in trouble. And when they're men of knowledge, it's some sort of demonic knowledge meant for destroying the world. Or they use their knowledge to put forward theories that matter is everything, that there's no God in control. Asatyam apratishtam te jagadahur anishuram. But pious persons, faced with these circumstances, turn toward Krishna. They're not considered pure devotees, but they're devotees. Or they're just beginners on the process of devotional service. There's a noteworthy point that Prabhupada makes on 345, those who have the same page. It's the second paragraph. Prabhupada says, the second paragraph of the purport, as far as the miscreants are concerned, for them devotional service is very difficult because their lives are selfish, irregular, and without spiritual goals. But even some of them, by chance, when they come in contact with a pure devotee, also become pure devotees. And Prabhupada talks about that in the next paragraph, how these different kinds of people, if they come in touch with Krishna consciousness and the association of a pure devotee, can also become pure devotees. We have so many examples, like Mrigari the hunter, who is not a pious person, but who came in touch with a pure devotee and became a pure devotee. Valmiki was a murderer, and by the association of Narada, he became a pure devotee. There's so many examples of people whose background was not pious, but who, by good fortune, came in touch with a devotee and began the process of devotional service. So it's what would you say, something radical or something hopeful, or it's radical or hopeful that anyone, even the miscreants, can be purified by the association of a pure devotee. And what to speak of, that's also there, Kirata Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasha, people whose background is impious, can all be purified, Prabhu Vishnave Namah, by the power of Lord Vishnu manifest through a pure devotee. It's called causeless mercy. Just good fortune. You don't really know how you got it. You just got it. Chance, we read it as Krishna's mercy, or mercy of the devotee. Can't trace out why it happened. Something else? Yes? Loud, please. Yeah, there's a discussion about this in Nectar of Devotion. In Rupa Goswami takes it that these people are not yet Kanishtha Adhikaris. And Prabhupada takes it that they are Kanishtha Adhikaris. So Dhanadhar Maharaj explained to me that in a particular sense that Rupa Goswami is using it, they're not yet Kanishtha Adhikaris, but in a more general sense as beginners, you can say that they are Kanishtha Adhikaris. His point why they're not is because they don't, they haven't regularly taken up devotional service. They're just inclined to it, and not particularly for service, but out of some circumstance, they get into devotional service. But there's not really much there to talk about in the way of devotion. They're just starting. So it's said that they don't have the adhikar, Kanishtha adhikari. Adhikar means certain qualification. So in Rupa Goswami's discussion, they're not really quite qualified. But Prabhupada takes it differently, that they're on the beginning stage. So everything has gradations, beginning or just having begun. Does that address your question? Yes. Yeah, it's all... the idea is that anyone can take to devotional service. Certainly, akama, those who have no material desires, can take to devotional service. Those who are mokshakama, who are desiring liberation, can approach Krishna for that liberation. Yeah, the gyanis particularly may be looking for liberation. And sarvakama, those who are after some... Of course, relief from material distress or after money or whatever it is they want, they can all approach Krishna if they're broad-minded, fortunate persons. Which is... My observation is you go crazy trying to correlate. Does this verse correlate to that verse in another book? And trying to draw lines and make correspondences, you can really drive yourself nuts. Because generally speaking, the ideas are being presented in different frameworks, sometimes different terminology. The gist of it all is the same, that there's a gradual process by which a forgotten soul, as Prabhupada calls them, an eternally conditioned soul, gets the seed of devotional service or gets the first opportunity for devotional service by Krishna's mercy and then gradually makes progress, giving up material desires and coming to the platform of uttama bhakti, pure devotional service. But how that's described by different authors in different books, in different places, differs. So scholars love this. They love comparing this to that and analyzing how this corresponds to that, how Madonna is like Ophelia in Hamlet. Or how Kunti is like Joan of Arc or something. You know, they'll find some sort of correspondences and the differences and the similarities, and they'll drive you nuts. They'll really drive you crazy with their more or less invented categories. Yes? Yeah, there's threes and there's fours and there's... It seems a little like mental speculation. Now, sometimes our acharyas do it. They'll make correspondences between something and something. And then we accept that. But to try to match up, play by numbers, paint by numbers, to play everything in such a way as to say, well, there's four of these and four of those, so there must be a relationship between these four and those four. There are four kinds of pious person, there are four kinds of impious person, and there were four beetles. John, Paul, Ringo, and the other one, and George. So I wonder what kind of correspondences, you know, there might be, because Beatles are part of Krishna's creation. So you can drive yourself a little nuts with that sort of thing. Best to try to understand each idea within its context and get that down, and that will help us. Okay, something more? Yes.
Maharaj, actually there is a little confusion still when we look at the course book.
Love that.
In the course book, Nectar of Devotion, where Prabhupada is giving a lecture on Anya Bhilashita. So Prabhupada is saying that one should not be habituated to any desires other than serving Krishna. And there he gives the example of Gajendra, that it was not his nature actually, Gajendra's nature, to call out for the help, but because it was emergency situation, so he called out. So his calling out for the help of the Lord cannot be ruled out from the realm of pure devotional service.
Cannot be ruled out. Yeah, you see again, in different contexts, the acharyas will make different points from the same narration. So sometimes the acharya will say, you see, it was not really a material motive, it was just his instinctive calling out for the Lord, because in his previous life he was a devotee. Another acharya will make the point that he really had no interest in devotional service to the Lord. His interest was in splashing around with the Susie Elephant and her associates. And, you know, just somehow or other, because he was really in need, he called out to the Lord. And it really had no devotional motivation there. He just wanted to save his hide. And another acharya will make another point. So I think we talked about this the other day, that you can look at these narrations from different angles and illustrate different things. I can take this chair and make the point about there are so many things that are needless. We could just as easily sit on the ground, and they've invented these chairs. Or I could take the same chair and say that it's a manifestation of human intelligence. That the animals have no chairs, but the human beings can make chairs. Or I can use it as an example of how the institute has gradually grown because of the sincerity of devotees, so that now they can afford chairs. You know, so many points I could make from the chair. How it's useless, how it's useful. You know, the same point. What is the need of such chairs? Sukadeva Goswami had no need of a chair. The sages were sitting on the ground. We've invented all these useless things like furniture. And then on the other side, I'll say, no, the human being has made these useful things because the human being is intelligent. So according to what point you want to make, you can take the same facts and make your point. In any case, the acharyas are making the point that we should be engaged in devotional service. And the particulars of that science of devotional service, they're illustrating in different ways with different incidents. Is that okay? And we see that they do, just like Krishna, you know. Why did he close his eyes? Huh? Yeah. There's at least four. He closed his eyes because he was sleepy. He closed his eyes because he was going to have to kill a woman. Closed his eyes because she was really nasty looking. He closed his eyes because he wanted to reassure her that it's okay, I'm just accepting you like an ordinary nurse. He closed his eyes. You know, you'll come up, acharyas can come up with so many different reasons why Krishna closed his eyes. Now, you know, who's right? What's the authoritative conclusion? Now, the same incident is interpreted by different acharyas in different ways to bring out appreciation of Krishna in different ways. So the same incidents are sometimes told or sometimes drawn upon to illustrate different points. Hmm? like they had just elected that president. So I could make so many different points. You know, it shows how America is so great that from whatever background the person can be elected. Or it shows how America is so degraded that by manipulation of political influence, any fool can be elected president of the United States. Or I can, you know, I can make 100 different, illustrate so many different things from that one fact that this gentleman has been elected president. Even a person with no great record of experience can be elected by the voice of the people. Or that people are so foolish that they'll elect a man who has practically no record of experience. You know, different points you can make. Okay? All right. Then Krishna points out, Udara sarva evaite gyani tvatma eva me matam astita sahi yuktatma mam ivan uttamam gatim. Krishna picks out that all of these devotees, or all of these beginners in devotional service, are broad-minded or magnanimous persons. But the jnani is the best of them. I saw in one commentary that the lower grade among these four are the arta and artarti, and the higher grade are the jnani and jigyasu. But the best Krishna picks out is jnani. And Prabhupada says, because from the very beginning his interest, more or less, is knowledge. He's interested in the absolute, because he's the absolute, not because of what he can get. So he's considered the best. And Prabhupada quotes, sadhavo hridayam mahyam, sadhunam hridayam tvaham. You remember that's on that slip that slipped at one point. Atmaiva me matam. Krishna said, I consider him to be just like my own self. Atma eva. Atma eva. Yes? Atma eva, just like my own self. Just like my own self. I consider him. That means he's very dear to me. You say, I consider him to be just like my own self, like my second self. It means very tight. So Krishna says, these people, the jnanis who come to devotional service, they're among them, particularly singled out. And they're sure to attain the highest perfection being engaged in devotional service. Anything about this?
It's really extraordinary that the Swami doesn't even consider them, even him. I mean, just think about it.
Yeah.
He's so dear to Krishna.
Beginners are picked out, and they're not quite. You can say, either you can say that they're beginners or they're candidates for becoming beginners. But they're singled out. Even we see, someone comes as a beginner, like we saw, that someone just picked up this morning, Perfect Questions, Perfect Answers. And you've read the book. Somebody comes who's a rank beginner. He's not following the four regular principles. He's not initiated. He hasn't come to surrender. Somehow or other, he's just wound up on the spot. There he was in India doing something with the Peace Corps, and somehow or other, he wound up in Mayapur. And Prabhupada picks him out. Instead of spending, you know, all day talking to the senior devotees or the, you know, most intimate disciples or the new disciples, he spends several days talking to this person who's not even, you know, he's not chanting really, he's not following, he's not doing anything. The Prabhupada picks him out and says, well, this guy's a candidate. He's got some interest. He's got some good questions. He's got some good questions. So he's a very good boy. You see? What is he? What kind of adhikari? He's not even a beginner in devotional service. He hasn't come yet to the point that Krishna is God and I have to serve him. That hasn't even been reached yet. But there's some questions. There's some interest. So then a pure devotee takes an interest. Here's somebody who's a candidate. Very good candidate. There are so many people. So, Swamiji, my mother is having not very good health, and if you would give your blessings, you know, probably. But here's somebody who's coming with some questions. What you'd say, like the Gyani, he has some philosophical questions. So Prabhupada immediately, yes, bring that boy. What are his questions? You see? And then what happens? Gradually. So then he becomes, develops the adhikar. And yes, let me follow the principles, let me chant, let me engage in service, let me dedicate my whole life. You see? So sometimes even the beginner is singled out for special attention. Yes, he's a very good candidate. Is that okay? Okay. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanaman mam prapajyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudulava. Very... what are you going to say? I can't say anything about Bhagavad Gita. This is a very good verse. They're all good verses. But it's quite something to consider that this person who's a jnani, there's so many, not very many, actually, Manusyanam Sahasreshu, out of so many thousands, only a few are interested in knowledge. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu goes through that whole progression. Out of so many living entities, only a few are human beings. Out of them, only a few are civilized, and so on. Then you come to a few who are jnanis, who are actually looking for knowledge. And Krishna says that after many such births, the jnani surrenders to me. That means this is the perfection of jnan, the perfection of knowledge, to surrender to Krishna. And he's called Sudurlabha Mahatma, a rare Mahatma. He understands Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Remember, I mentioned the other day that this iti means in quotes. So Vasudeva Sarvam. Vasudeva is everything, in quotes. That's what he decides. He realizes after many births that, well, Vasudev, Krishna is everything. Who's Vasudev? Son of Vasudev, he's Vasudev. Like Prabhupada said, we identify just like with our guru kulis. You know, okay, you're Govindadas, but whose son are you? Which Govindadas are you? I'm the son of such and such. Oh, you're the son of such and such. So now we have an identification that this person is Govindadas, the son of Prajapati Das. Okay, now we know who you are. So in the same way, Krishna is identified Vasudev, Vasudev. The son of Vasudev is Vasudev. So this particular person, Vasudev, otherwise he could have, it would fit the meter, you could say Brahmaneva Sarvamiti. Brahman is everything. But that's what they realized before. Now they've come to the point, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Krishna is everything. And therefore, Prapadyante, they surrender. And Prabhupada made the point that if after many lives, when you finally come to the point of your perfection, if after coming to the point of perfection you're going to surrender to Krishna, why not make a shortcut and surrender to Krishna now? Why wait for so many more lives? If when you come to the conclusion you're going to surrender, well, why not just do it now? Surrender and be done with it. Any questions? Yes.
The fourth line says,
in the beginning of spiritual realization, while one is trying to give up one's attachment to materialism, there is some leaning towards impersonalism.
Gee, I have a little bookmark right there. I'm glad you brought that up. Generally, that's the idea, that spiritual life begins, we say, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavan. The beginners, they look around and they say, oh, the sun is everywhere. And then more advanced, you say, oh, the sun's in the sky someplace. And then more advanced, you say, oh, wonder who lives there, and okay, I'm ready to go. Meet the sun god. So the beginners are the impersonalists. Even suppose I'm going to meet somebody. So the beginning is, I don't know what he looks like. I don't know really anything about him. He's just some person. How am I going to recognize him? Then I get to know the person a little bit. Then we become good friends. Or you see a mountain from a distance. It looks just like a big hazy cloud. You get closer, you see that there's trees and there's specific things. You get close in and you see all the leaves and the birds and the streams and everything. Or what is that? From a distance you see a train, all you see is a bright light. And it gets closer, you start to see that it's a train. And you get still closer and you see all the cars and you see the people inside and you see the whole thing. So these are progressive stages of realization of the absolute truth. Impersonal, localized, and personal. So in the beginning, and we see this practically in our attempts to spread Krishna consciousness, people generally have a sort of vague, impersonal idea of God. Either God is, these days God is a force, God is everything, God is love, God is... Aren't we all really God? God is everywhere. God is sort of a vague, impersonal sort of, or even a rigidly impersonal sense that if God had a form, he would be limited. If God had a name, it puts a limit on him. For God to be to have activities would be placing him within the material realm. So you get this sort of speculative approach that figures out that God couldn't be a person because then he would be limited. So you get all of these ways of reaching the conclusion that God must be something very general, because to specify God would be to limit God. You make God specific, he becomes limited. That's the material conception. We specify that you're wearing white, that means you're not wearing saffron. We specify that you're Indian, that means you're not European or American. If you're this, you're not that. So to specify means to specify limitations, really. So if we make God specific, then we're limiting God. That's the conception that the beginners have, because they don't understand that there can be unlimited qualities, unlimited form, unlimited pastimes, unlimited names, everything unlimited, that they can't grasp, because that you can really only understand by the mercy of Krishna. So they generally start off with impersonalist leanings. Therefore Prabhupada's job practically nirvishesha shunyavadi paschita deshatari, to deliver the Western countries from Shunyavad and Nirvisheshvad. About the Goswamis also, Kaivalya Nistarako, to deliver the living beings from the devouring mouth of liberation, to save them from salvation. So that's the beginning leaning. Therefore, Prabhupada, so much is preaching on this point. The story is famous that, so many famous stories are there, especially from the beginning, how Prabhupada was preaching against the impersonalism again and again. even Hayagriva Prabhu, the original editor of Bhagavad Gita, kept wondering, you know, who are these Mayavadis that Prabhupada's talking about? You know, it must be like he's on a kick about some sect in India that he's really got it in for. You know, because he keeps talking about these Mayavadis. They even joke, have you seen a Mayavadi? You went out this afternoon, did you see any Mayavadis? I haven't seen any Mayavadis. And then gradually they realized that the Mayavadis were them. Well, I don't know if it was the incident that sparked that, but that famous incident where one devotee, Kirtanananda, raised some question, essentially favoring an impersonalist. Some Prabhupada was blasting, I think, Dr. Radhakrishna or something, for an impersonalist point of view. 932, Yamanmanabhava. And you know, Kirtanananda said, well, I don't really see what's wrong with it. And he began to expound on the impersonalist view and sort of went on about it, and Prabhupada said, is that all?
Saw?
Okay, any questions further? Excuse me? It won't be in the folio, no. It was too early. It wasn't recorded. Anything else? Yes?
Description of how to become a gyani.
What qualifies one to become a gyani? You mean what are the qualities that a gyani has? Or what do you have to do to become a gyani?
How one develops the qualification to become a gyani?
You gradually rise to the mode of goodness. In the mode of ignorance, you know, there's no, it's agyan. Agyanam is the agyanam tamasapalam. If you're in the mode of ignorance, you become an agyani. You practically knock out any prospect of knowledge. If you're in the mode of passion, your knowledge is all confused. You can't distinguish between one thing and the other thing because you're, you can distinguish, but you get things confused in the mode of passion. And generally, one is too interested in sense gratification, satisfying his material desires. So we see practically, therefore, those who are too attached to sense gratification. I remember I was in New York Rath Yatra doing questions and answers. The first guy who comes up to me, he's a New Yorker, comes, sits down, puts his little girlfriend with her miniskirt on his lap and says, so what's your philosophy? Hard to be a gyani under such circumstances. But when a person comes to the mode of goodness, then satvam sanjayate gyanam. Radaso lobe vachapam moho tamaso, like that. From the mode of goodness, knowledge develops. From the mode of passion, greed. In the first edition of Bhagavad Gita, it said grief, which is also true. But that's not what lobha is. And from the mode of passion, greed develops lobha. And from the mode of ignorance develop illusion and darkness and ignorance, moho, tamaso, bhavatyajnanam, like that. So the qualification for jnani, real jnanis are those who are in the mode of goodness. You get these people, you say, well, he's a real jnani. You know, he's drinking scotch and speculating on the Upanishads. So that's not really a very, very much of a jnani. The jnanis are those who are living in the mode of goodness. Because by coming to the mode of goodness, they naturally become thoughtful, they naturally, their questions about the real issues in life develop. Yeah, therefore, properly, a real jnani is something quite. I remember we went to on Padayatra, Kanchipura, in South India, and it's one of the seats of one of the Shankaracharyas. Jagannath Puri is one place, and there are other places, and one place is Kanchipura. The Shankaracharya of Kanchipuram is very influential post. And we met there were three Shankaracharyas actually. There was an elderly man, there was his successor, who was a young fellow, who later got in trouble with the Indian government, and his reputation was quite bad. And then there was a young boy who was being trained as the third Shankaracharya. And the elder Shankaracharya, his reputation was actually very high. And he he'd done Padayatra all over so many different places. He had just, you know, like one cloth. He had no possessions. Just to see him, he was an effulgent person. Just, you would see, brightly effulgent. And had the qualities of a sadhu. He was peaceful, unattached, and so on. And actually, he gave his blessings to the Padayatra, that I wish that Krishna Nam shine all over the world. And he asked us to do kirtan. So there's a jnani for you. You know, there's a pukka jnani. I mean, totally devoted to Shankaracharya's philosophy, impersonalism. Austere, serious, free from so many material attachments and bad habits and so on. There's a jnani. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Prakashananda Saraswati. Now we're talking jnanis. You know, these guys that you meet on the street, and they're, you know, they've got a woman on one hand and a beer in the other, and they have questions about the meaning of life. Okay, something is there. At least they have some question, but they're not very high grade jnanis. Just like in India, we were discussing the other day, you get so many material things, and they're kind of like the Western version, but they don't work. So it works the opposite in the West. You get these kind of jnanis, but they're not really jnanis. They're not really high-grade jnanis. They're sort of knockoff, second-class materials kind of jnanis, poor copies. But anyway, a second-class jnani is better than no jnani, or, you know, a second-class whatever it is that they're selling here is better than no whatever it is. So there's some sort of interest in jnan. So we say that they're jnanis. Oh, that guy was a real jnani. Okay, that guy was a real jnani. So, okay. Or commonly we say, he's a real mode of goodness person. Now, if you really got into his life, it's not quite the mode of goodness, but relatively to the guys around him, you could say he's a mode of goodness person. Anyway, however you categorize it, these people show some interest. That's their qualification. They show some interest. They have some questions to be answered. Maybe they're going about it the wrong way. They're trying to find out by taking drugs. They're trying to find out by speculating. They're trying to find out by reading so many books. They're trying to find out by attending discourses by foolish persons. Whatever it is. But they have some interest. Okay, we start with that. He's a pious person in that sense. That's preaching. You find some little spark and fan it. Some spark. Or someone else, he doesn't have many questions. He just likes the food. Rabindra Sroop was telling me that when the Radha Damodar party came into Philadelphia, Tamal Krishna Maharaj would be preaching to the different people in the crowd who would be, they'd have some kirtan performance, and then people gather around, and you pick some people to talk to. And he said, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you first ask someone, so how do you like the food? If the person said, you go on to the next person. Well, that's a qualification. I just like the food. Or, I don't know, I just like the people. Or, whatever it is. As soon as there's something, okay, there's something he likes, fan that. It answers his questions, or he likes the food, or the people are nice, or whatever it is. He likes to, it's a good place to come and do things, and, people like I do things, I like doing things for people, and okay, great. Somehow or other, there's some little bit of inclination. We fan that inclination, and it can become gradually a little fire, and become a big fire. So that's the idea. Is that okay? Why don't we take a break here? It's about time for our break. And we'll see you in... Now it's, let's say... it's 10 after, just going on 20 after, you get an extra 2 minutes if you're here by 20 after, so don't take more than that.
Maharaj, should I get you some lime tea?
Some? No, yeah. I don't know what that was, it was just something out
there. Actually, I've been...